Actually, one of the greatest indicators of competency in software engineering is language skills, not math or science.
Welcome to Coding Chats with me, John Cricket, and today I have on as a guest, Callie Bulachara. Welcome, Callie. Thank you for coming on the show. It'd be lovely to hear a little bit more about you, what you do, what your day-to-day role is as a software engineer.
Yeah, absolutely. So at this moment, I'm a senior software engineer at New Relic, and man, what do I do all day? Well, some days there's lots of meetings, some days there's lots of debugging. The debugging days are my favorite. My team has a lot of internal processes. So we own something like 10 applications, everything from Rails to GraphQL to TypeScript to React. So we maintain a lot of that. And as a senior, I have a lot more meetings than I used to. Just a lot of like planning meetings and figuring out the work meetings and that kind of stuff. But my favorite part is definitely the rare times I get to implement a completely new feature. Those are the best days. And also debugging or tracking down why something's not working. So that's a little bit about my days.
I've pulled that string now. You've mentioned debugging twice in that, and I've seen it on a few of your LinkedIn posts, and I think on your profile as well. So what's the fascination with debugging? Let's hear more about that.
Yeah. Oh man, debugging. I think one of the reasons I love it so much was because of how much it used to terrify me. When I started as a software engineer, it just felt like when something wasn't working or when it was broken, it was like, this is it. This is the end. This is where I find out that I'm not cut out for this. This is where I find out that I'm just, this is the end of the road. This is the end of the software engineering road. And then as a professional software engineer, now I'm just like, oh, that's most of the job is debugging my code or somebody else's. And so
yeah, I think, we've all had
I think I've just, I've gotten a lot more confidence in even in the moment, which happens all the time, where I'm like, I literally have no idea what's causing this. I have a lot of confidence in, but we will figure it out. Like there is a reason, there is a cause. I'll either learn something brand new or I will notice that I misspelled that variable 3 years ago. You know, something. I'm going to learn something in this situation. And I love the problem solving aspect of it and how you have to hold like so many different details in your head at one time of like, I looked at this, it's not this, but it could have been here, but not this dashboard showed this, so it can't be that. So kind of like all these constraints. I like that. And I wouldn't say I like the communication part of it too, like where you have to invite people in to help you solve the problem, or you have to be nice when you're frustrated. Like a few of my teammates know when there's a bug that has been plaguing us for a while, I get really like irritated and I use an irritated tone, but I'll always tell them, I'm like, I'm very sorry. I'm not mad at you. I'm mad at the code. Please forgive me for my tone of voice right now. I'm just very mad at reality. I just love the problem solving and just there's always something to learn. So, yeah.
Cool. I think when we all started, we had that fear. So you sounds like you really lent into it and decided that you weren't going to back away. You were going to tackle it head on.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah. I think, especially by the time I really got deeper into debugging, part of it was a little bit of the sunk cost fallacy where it's like, well, you're here now, Callie. So you just got to figure it out. Like you're a software engineer now. So buck up and get it done. There's been other experiences in my life too, where I came up against something professionally or not, but that was just, it felt really hard or like really beyond my abilities and it worked out or I figured it out. And so it's like, I've had this feeling before and it was okay. So maybe it'll be okay this time too.
I think we all feel that fear when we start. For me, it was 30 odd years ago now. I don't want to remember how long ago it was. I think it's been more recently for you. So I was wondering if you had any particular advice from, you know, your recent experience that you could give to other people about how to lean in and really grasp that opportunity for growth and view it as a positive?
Yeah, absolutely. I think for me, there's a lot of other, I don't know what the right word is, barriers or obstacles. Like for one, so I have an anxiety disorder. I also have like a depression disorder. And I mentioned that just because those are things that I've just learned to it's just a part of my life. And it's just something I have to learn to live with if I want to, I guess, be okay or excel. So one of the things that helps me a lot in general with my anxiety is by challenging it head on. So when my anxiety is like, oh, if you do this, something bad will happen. Honestly, the best thing for me to do in that situation is to do the thing so that I can be like, see, you're wrong. I survived and it's okay. Now, sometimes I don't really have the fortitude to do that at a given time because, you know, things are hard sometimes. But I just felt like software engineering was just me doing that over and over again. So the biggest thing for me is I don't think we need to wait until we feel ready to do things. I don't think we need to wait until we feel confident or like, oh yeah, I totally got this. Like, do it scared. It's okay if you do it when you're like, I don't know if I can do that. It's like, well, just try, just see what happens. I think for too much of my life and even now, sometimes, to be honest, like I just try to wait until my entire brain and body are all on board. And that's just so rare that I just can't keep waiting for that. I just have to just do it anyways. Like even this past week at work, there was a bug that I'm like, this is it. This is the time they find out I was the wrong person to hire. Like, I don't know. I have no idea how to solve this, but of just being like, well, I know where to start. I know where to look. I know what to try, even though I don't think it's going to work. But like, I know what motions to go through. And as I go through it, it works. So yeah, just challenging your own thoughts by doing the thing anyways, and not waiting until you reach this utopia or perfect transcendent moment where your mind and your emotions come together and you're like, yes, today I will conquer. Like maybe you're just going to be like, wow, this is going to suck, but I'll try, you know. I'll at least try.
Cool. So very much you take the approach then of feel the fear and do it anyway. Just start, get stuck in.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's especially true too, what you said. Like I'm a huge advocate for like feeling our feelings. And my husband's a therapist, so I have to think that. But like it's so important to process and not just be like, oh, I'm not scared or I'm not overwhelmed. Like I'm not stressed. Like repressing feelings, that just makes everything terrible. So don't do that. But yeah, the feeling and the still doing is they can both be true at the same time. I'm terrified and I'm going to do it anyways. So
I know from your background on LinkedIn and so on that you had a different path to software engineering from myself. So
yes,
you know, I've been playing with computers since I was 6 or 7, writing code since I was 9. Although I wanted to be a fighter pilot as a kid, you know, kind of boyhood dream sort of thing. It was probably fairly inevitable I was going to have to be a software engineer. You took a different path. I really wanted to hear a little bit about your path and how you came to be a software engineer.
Yeah, absolutely. Great question. And to be honest, a big part of it, I felt intimidated by, but intimidated by, I feel like pure engineers like yourself, John, where I'm like, oh no, I didn't take things apart when I was 5 or like I don't have a Raspberry Pi, things like that. But I mean, gratefully, wonderful people like yourself and others have been very welcoming to, I guess, unconventional paths like myself. So I really appreciate that. For me, so I used to be a high school English teacher. Around that time, I taught English in various capacities. Like I taught ESL abroad. I taught first graders how to read. But most of my training and most of my time was around high school English and absolutely loved it. Like, oh, teenagers are great. really good for your character growth. So
I can imagine.
Oh, yes. Yeah. I commented on someone's post recently on LinkedIn and they were like, oh yeah, teenagers smell blood. I'm like, oh, they do. They do. They will come for you. So that was wonderful, but I decided to leave teaching. And like leaving teaching and becoming a software engineer were two very different decisions. It was like, I'm going to leave teaching. Basically, it was just overwhelming. And I was like, I can be a teacher, or I can like have friends and like a spouse and children, but I can't do both. So I decided to have more of a life. But then I was like, what the heck am I supposed to do? Like, I don't want to go back to school. I don't want to be a journalist. What else am I supposed to do with an English degree? And I actually worked with an AP computer science teacher named Desmond. And he was helping me with something one day. And he said in passing, you know, Callie, I've always thought you'd make a great software engineer. And I didn't honestly feel affirmed by that. I'm also just like, what are you saying? Like, what a weird, unfounded compliment to give out to people. Like, I'm the English teacher. Are you confusing me with Brody, the math teacher? Like, what are you saying? And I basically said that because we were friends. And I was like, thanks, Desmond. But no, I'm not good at math. I'm not good at science. I'm the English teacher. And he's like, yeah, but, you know, software engineering at its core is problem solving. And you're a really good problem solver. And actually, one of the greatest indicators of competency in software engineering is language skills, not math or science. And I mean, I know English quite well. I speak Spanish. I know American Sign Language. And he knew all that. So he's like, yeah, see, like, that's what, like, Ruby, JavaScript, these languages, you're learning another language. Like, you're just like, you pick up the culture of a language. When you learn the language, you pick up the context, and even, I would say, in some ways, the culture of a language as well in software engineering. And so Desmond is just like a really nice guy, though. So I was like, I think he's just being randomly nice. So I looked up probably like Free Code Camp or something, and I worked on it for a weekend just to try it out. And I legitimately did it just to prove Desmond wrong. Because that's the type of person I am. But joke's on me, because I'm here now on Coding Chats. So he was right. And I just, yeah, I fell in love with it. I remember the first time I was doing like very basic HTML and CSS, and I made like a cat picture appear in my web browser. And I was like, I am a magician. I know everything. I'm so good at this. Yeah, that felt pretty cool. So yeah, then I just looked for a bunch of different resources, and I'm a very structured person, and I knew I needed to pay for something to teach me. Otherwise I just will never get it done. And so I didn't go back to school because I didn't want to, and it's very expensive here.
Yeah.
And I almost did a boot camp, but I decided not to because with my education background, I was like, I can't do this in 12 weeks or 16 weeks or even 6 months. Like, I know nothing about software engineering and I need to know everything. So I ended up going to
aiming high.
Yeah. I can't like not succeed. You know what I mean? I can't just like do entry level stuff. So yeah, I was like, I need to really deeply understand it. And so I found a school called Launch School, like launch a rocket, Launch School. Okay. What would I describe it as? I kind of describe it as like a mastery-based trade school. So it's self-paced. It's mastery-based, meaning like the exams are way harder than all of the tests for my master's degree, like ridiculously hard. And they teach you the fundamentals of everything, like the difference between like a parameter and an argument. Like, just what does it mean to like invoke a function versus define a function? Like, I didn't know. So yeah, like, so I did that for about 2 years. And in that, near the end of it, I created a observability solution that I contributed to open source called Horus. And then I landed a job at New Relic. So yeah, that's my life.
Cool. That's quite a journey. So yeah. I think I agree with, I think it was Desmond you said mm-hmm. that it's a lot of spoken language. I can see English and communication being a great benefit. After all, whether we like documentation for somebody, or we like a design document,
yeah,
we capture requirements, or we like code, it's all communication. Mm-hmm. I think I've seen the stat many times now that we like the code once and it gets read 8 or 9 times. So I can see the language being incredibly powerful for that. Does that match your experience?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, and like to me, like the best, even when I taught English, if anyone glances at my LinkedIn, you can tell I'm very passionate about communication. But I think even when I taught English in high school, is like teaching a language at its best is to teach people to communicate effectively. Like Shakespeare's cool. He's a very cool guy. But like the point of studying his stuff isn't like, oh, so that's where that word comes from. Like that doesn't really matter. The point is to be able to like, be able to study something that is foreign to your common way of speaking and to distill it and to argue with it, like for your arguments or argue against it and like synthesize information. And all of that comes with you to software engineering. Like I would love to say that we're all just real rational, logical beings, but like we're not. And so a lot of
not even close.
Not even close. Like even when we're using logic, we're like, let's say like John, you and I are building an app and we want to use two different frameworks or two different, I don't know, anything. And we have logic behind it, but there's also like, well, I just want to be right. And like, I'm irritated because you did that thing last week and I want to put you in your place, you know? Like there's all these different things going on. And so all of that is communication. And I'd love to say like, I have a friend who just started as a software engineer. And when he landed his job a few days before he started, he's like, so do you just like code 8 hours a day? Like, is that what I'm about to do? I'm like, bro, I wish. I wish I coded 8 hours a day. That would be bliss.
Oh, we all wish that, don't we?
Yeah, that's the dream that no one achieves. Maybe make a startup, then maybe you can code for 8 hours a day. So the rest of work is, yeah, it's those language skills, it's communication, it's writing good comments or descriptions on your PRs, it's those design documents, and oh, there's so many documents you have to write. Gosh, there's so many. So many documents. Yeah.
Oh, indeed. Indeed. And it's one of the things we hate doing, but it's incredibly useful. Yep. So apart from the launch school, was there anything else that you did to gain the technical and hard skills? It sounds like, you know, teaching really set you up with the soft skills. But what else did you look out for the hard skills?
Yeah, honestly, it was just launch school. That's it. That's it. That's all I did. It's just a very thorough curriculum. And at the end, it's even more thorough where, you know, they teach you all of the stuff you need for interviews, but not real life, like inverting a binary tree. Like nobody does that in real life. But we all need to know how to do it for an interview. I think that's actually part of my success really is I don't think launch school is like, has a, what's the right word? A monopoly on, I don't know, engineering skills. Like that's not true. Launch school perfectly matched what I needed, but I think what helped me excel and do the program so quickly, because some people it takes them like 5 years to do it or like 6 years, because it's very rigorous, but I gave it my like almost cult-like devotion. I was like, I will do this program. I'll finish it. And because I didn't get distracted by like, oh, well, should I do this other tutorial on the side? Or should I also just read this article? Should I do this over here? And then, so I didn't have like 1,000 quarter finished things. I was just like, Launch School has all these stats about their success and about how they bring people from zero to everything. And it appeals to all of my education knowledge, like the way they do the curriculum. And I'm like, this makes sense as an educator. This makes sense. It's funny because when I started at there too, I got kind of mad because like their tagline makes me mad. It says it's Launch School, the slow path to mastery. And I'm like, that's depressing. Right. Like, who wants to go on a slow path? Like, who wants to do that? Nobody.
That's true.
Versus like all these other programs are like, you know, land a $100,000 job in 12 weeks. And I'm like, that sounds really nice, but it appeals to my emotion and not my logic. So I should probably go to the slow path to mastery.
Yeah, I think a lot of those that make that promise probably promising too much from what we've seen. They're not giving people the skills they need to get into the market once it becomes slightly competitive.
Yeah.
So you sound commendably focused, and I'm feeling quite embarrassed here looking at my screen with about 2,000 tabs open of all the different things I'm looking
at. It's a safe place, John. It's a safe place.
Oh, dear. I'm doing it wrong.
It's all good.
Cool. So we've talked a lot about the technical skills there. But what I really want to talk to you about is the emotional intelligence. I don't know if you saw, I've forgotten the chap's name, but a post on Twitter recently about a response a recruiter sent to a guy because he didn't turn up for the interview and they had some confusion about time zones.
Oh, yeah. I think I saw that. Yeah, it was very, it's just like insulting him. Yeah.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
So I think it's a great example of how communication skills aren't particularly great in our industry sometimes, and that includes the surrounding industry, like the recruiters that deal with us. Mm-hmm. And Theo on YouTube made a interesting video that dealt with responding to it. And a bit that really stood out for me is he talked about the average communication skills of software engineers being lower than the average of the population in general. Mm-hmm. And that was his view. And I think it's reasonable. I think that probably is fair. Mm-hmm. I certainly think at the beginning of my career, I would, now looking back on it in hindsight, say that my skills were probably below the average for the general community. How do you feel about that?
Yeah, it's a good question. I honestly want to ask you more follow-up questions because you have more experience than me. So I want to know what it's been like in the industry. But I guess before that, I would say yes and no. Like, I'm sure the answer is yes. I think my experience doesn't back it up because I just don't have decades of experience with like all these different companies. So when I got my job at New Relic, I had an offer from my dream company, which was Cloudflare and New Relic. And I ended up taking New Relic because the people on my team were just so wonderful. They were so kind and so helpful and like people I would just want to kick it with on the weekends. And so I was like, what? These are just wonderful people. And so there's other people like outside of my team that I work with, and there's other people, you know, on other teams that I'm like, oh yeah, I wouldn't like working with you. That'd be really hard. So I definitely see it kind of like I don't know. It just depends on the person. But that said, like I've told people various times the last few months that I'm like really passionate about soft skills and communication and tech. And whether someone is in tech or not, 100% of the time, their reaction is, oh my gosh, that is so needed. So I'm like, well, okay. I guess everyone thinks that. So I think I've just been really fortunate, like a side tangent a little bit, that I feel like people talk a lot about how difficult it is for women in STEM, mm-hmm. software engineering and whatever else. And I 100% see it, and I have never experienced it. I see it happen to people all the time. But I've been so fortunate where I'm like, I've had very few, not even as a software engineer, like in other parts of my life where I've like experienced sexism. And so I'm like, I see it, but I'm like protected by it for some reason, or maybe I'm just really oblivious. That's possible, honestly. But, so yeah, for both things where it's like, oh, aren't like software engineers super rude? I'm like, maybe I just only interact with the great ones, but I hear they're really rude. I just don't talk to those people, I guess. Yeah.
Well, hopefully some of that reflects that the industry has changed over the last 30 years and evolved a bit. Mm-hmm. For example, when I went to university, there were 102 students on my course. Mm-hmm. And there was one lady out of all of that. So
yeah,
nowadays, I see the young graduates coming into the industry, see maybe 20-25% here in the UK are ladies.
Okay.
So it seems like we're I don't know, getting rid of the barriers or making it more inviting or breaking down some of the challenges to getting ladies pursuing a career in STEM.
Yeah, that's awesome.
So you go on then. Let me throw this back to you. You said you had some questions to ask.
Oh, well, I'm just curious, like how, what are the things that you, because we say like soft skills or communication, it's just an impractical word because it encompasses so much. Like, do you have stories or that you feel comfortable sharing of when you're like, oh yeah, you sir or you ma'am are below average when it comes to soft skills or even yourself, you know, that you did?
Well, I think the obvious one to share is the basis of a post I put up the other day. Yes, but and yes, and. Mm-hmm. Not too many years ago, I was working with a CEO, and he would repeatedly come on with some ideas of good, some that maybe not so good. And I was very, very focused on how do we make this thing work? Mm-hmm. That very logical, rational thing we talked about earlier. And he would come along with this great idea and say, hey, John, it'd be great if we could do this and we'll do X, Y, Z. And I'd listen to it and go, yes, but I'd then tell him all the reasons why it wouldn't work or what we should do differently. And I was there at the time thinking, okay, cool. He's got an idea. I'm listening to it. I'm saying yes. So I've confirmed his idea and it's good. And then I've told him what the problems are with it and how we'll deal with them.
Mm-hmm.
What I was missing and what didn't become clear was that he was just hearing that but and hearing that every single time I just shot down his ideas. So that was a very personal realization that, you know, I at the time thought I was doing a good job and was helping him out and we were collaborating. He was perceiving it completely differently.
Mm-hmm.
Now, again, my LinkedIn post the other day, a lot of people pushed back on that and said, you know, he shouldn't have been such a snowflake. Or, I mean, I didn't put the full detail of the story there, but people pushed back and said that anyone that gets upset by your word but is a snowflake. And other people said they'd rather we were blunt. And certainly, again, I fall into that category. I would rather people were blunt. I've also had in another company as a great example of this, I had an executive repeatedly tell me I should fire someone on my team because they constantly argued with me. And the executive thought that was terrible. You can't have this. You know, guy reports you, shouldn't be arguing with you. On the flip side, it was one of the best working relationships I've ever had. That argument was the pushback, that was criticism. And half the time that person was wrong. Half the time I was wrong, but all the time we built something better and we did a better job because we had that robust debate and it was always professional. It was always attacking the ideas, not the person. So I thought it was a great working relationship and the executive thought we should fire this guy. It's very different views of the same situation. And so that means that communication is as much about the person receiving it as the person giving it. And you have to tailor that. And I was oblivious to that for too long, personally.
I think that's, I love that because I think, yeah, like we just, I mean, communicate, even effective communication, I think there are probably some like, no, there are, like there are some ground rules like mutual respect, right? Like that's just needed. But then there's things that to one person seems very bad, like, you know, you being told fire this guy and you're like, he is like a gift because we can disagree and he's right when I'm wrong and, you know, vice versa. And so I think about the people that I can be the most honest with, even like just professionally, like I can just be like, yeah, this code doesn't make any sense. Or like your tests are super lacking or like, but if I can just be that honest and they know that I respect them, I think they're great. We can go so much faster than if I have to tiptoe around it or like fix it behind their back, which is also a terrible thing to do. Don't do that. But you know what I mean? Like there's all these like mechanics. We do stuff around people. But I still think there's a certain level of care we have to give people before we have that rapport. But once we have that rapport, you can be much more blunt and get so much more done because you're just like, we have a mutual understanding. It's fine. Like we can just go faster.
Yeah, absolutely. So this is a nice segue in a way into what you're talking about now and on LinkedIn a little bit, and you're launching a podcast.
Yeah.
And I understand that the podcast is called The Majority of Work, because you're pointing out that all this communication and soft skills is the majority of the work that we do. Have I got that right? Would you like to tell us a bit more about it?
Nailed it. It's funny, wherever I've worked as an English teacher and now a software engineer, and even when I was back at Launch School, I find myself spending a lot of time on the people parts of whatever job it is. As an English teacher, it kind of makes sense because like the people are the job, right? But it wasn't even like, oh, it's all the curriculum or it's all the essay grading, though that did suck. That was very long. But it was more of just like, oh, this other teacher needs this, but this other teacher like went behind my back, or this principal did this. And you know, it's all the like, I almost felt like high school. I was in high school myself. Like just a lot of those interpersonal dynamics. And I'm like, this is taking up the majority of my bandwidth and the majority of my time. And part of the reason I became a software engineer, besides the problem solving and the very cool things that Desmond would write about, but I was like, oh, I can just like hang out with computers and it'll be so much easier. Because, you know, there's a reason why JavaScript is airing out, and I'll find it and it'll be a beautiful day. That's sort of true. But as the name goes, the majority of work still involves other people. Like to this day, my most stressful or draining or another word like that, that just like takes it out of me or makes my week stressful, it is never because JavaScript is against me. Like it has nothing to do with JavaScript. It's because priorities change or because my manager said something that was really difficult for me to implement, or these two engineers are mad at each other. So now this feature isn't going out the way we want to because they're not working together as they should. Like it's so much. And so even as a software engineer at New Relic, I have, again, very kind colleagues, and a few of them have even like told me that they're just like, Callie, I wouldn't be able to work with this person if you hadn't taught me how. I wouldn't be able to take on this kind of work if you hadn't taught me how. And it's not like, again, I didn't teach them tech anything. I taught them like some empathy practices of how to see things from other people's perspective. I taught them how to confront people, but in a respectful way. I helped them process difficult feedback from superiors. These are the things that are weighing people down. And so these are the things that I'm teaching them. So then they're freed up to do the thing that we all want to do, and that's just code. But we have to wade through people. We have to wade through the majority of work to get to that. And a friend of mine, when I was telling him about starting majority of work, is he was like, you should like frame it like a negative thing. Like the majority of like people are the work. And I'm like, I don't think working with people is an inherently negative thing, but I think it can be. Like it can feel like people are the barrier to my career or just general happiness because it's so hard to work with them. But I mean, some of my favorite people are at New Relic right now. And I'm like, I just want to be friends with you guys forever because you're wonderful people. And so it's the majority of work, and it can be super negative. And in fact, I've seen it happen all the time, but it can also be what makes your job wonderful. It can be the difference between like one person can be your enemy where you're like, oh, this person has to approve my PR, but they're mad at me because the thing of last week. Oh, this sucks. Or it can be, oh, I want to ask this person what they think about this because I want to catch up with them. And I also need their help because I have no idea how to debug this. So yeah, people are just, it's the majority. And so we can have a majority great career or we can have a majority awful, but the people are there no matter what.
Cool. So as I'm listening to that and you're talking about helping people on your team and they appreciate that, I'm starting to think the future of your career might be engineering manager.
Oh.
You're the kind of person there that I think we need, that's focusing on coaching and mentoring their people and helping their team develop those skills.
I appreciate that.
Do you have a different plan to help people develop their soft skills?
Yeah. Engineering manager, I'll keep thinking about it. I do love the mentoring and the coaching. The hard part is I have to give up my favorite part, which is the coding. And then also I just look at engineering manager schedules and there's so many meetings. It just makes me stressed looking at their calendars, just real stressed. I don't know if I could do that. So alternatively, even as I continue to be an IC, I have the podcast, as you've kindly mentioned. So the Majority of Work podcast, it's free for anyone and everyone. And it's a place where I talk about different concepts that I experience and get questions about, and also have lovely guests on, and as well as like host Q&As when people have specific questions. But the idea is, you know, people always talk about software engineers need to have great soft skills. They need to be great at communication, but they never tell us how. They're just like, yeah, just like communicate better. And it's like, cool, cool. What are you saying? Cause that's another thing. Sorry, I keep getting on tangents, but like is I think one of the greatest disservices we can do to each other in communication, anything, is just to assume people are equipped to excel. And maybe they're not. Like, maybe that person who interrupts everyone, like, oh my gosh, it's so annoying, he interrupts everyone. Maybe no one has told him. And I know that blows your mind, but there's a very high chance that people talk about him, but have never told him, hey, when you do this, is interrupting, and it makes people feel disrespected when they're around you. Maybe they don't know. Yeah, just can we just like talk about stuff? So that's a big thing.
Cool. Yeah. So I totally agree, and I think there were plenty of times if I reflect on my early career where if somebody had just said to me, "Hey, John, think about that," a little bit earlier, I may have avoided a few mistakes that I made along the way.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's totally hard. I mean, giving constructive feedback. I mean, I don't know. I've been doing it intentionally for over a decade, but I still feel like I'm going to throw up every time. So, you know, I'm not saying it emotionally gets easier, but it does get functionally easier where like, you know what to do and you get better at it. So yeah, in addition to the podcast, I also offer, one-on-one coaching, maybe group coaching in the future, but one-on-one coaching where, just work with software engineers sometimes when they're looking for a job, sometimes when they already have a job, and just set goals and help them accomplish whatever they need to. I have some clients who their focus is, I need to build my confidence at work. And so we're focusing on that. Another is like, I don't know how to have difficult conversations at work, work on that. Or others like, I don't have the skills or the confidence to do demos or presentations, or I don't know how to write documents, or people always misunderstand me when I talk. And so I just don't know how to change that and be clearer. I don't know how to advocate for myself for a promotion. There's like this secret undercurrent of all these different communication patterns that I just don't personally understand. Could you help me understand them? I'm like, yeah, absolutely. So yeah, I also offer that coaching when people just want more help, and that's really rewarding. And yeah, I really enjoy doing that a lot.
So last but one question then. Mm-hmm. You mentioned in that you have that decade of intentional feedback. Mm-hmm. And I think that's probably referring back to, you know, working as a teacher, you were presumably marking assignments and giving students feedback. Mm-hmm. That sounds like it's another transferable skill that you've brought with you from teaching that a lot of software engineers may not have gained.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's true. You know, I don't think I'd fully thought about that from the teaching perspective, but it teaches that balance of like, I have to be honest because I'm not going to pass them if they're actually failing. Like, that's not a thing. So I have to give them constructive or at the very least negative feedback, like, no, you did not get all of them right. Or your essay is very bad, you know? But they're also teenagers and I don't want to like crush their souls. So finding the balance of giving them feedback and making it clear that I want them to grow with it and not that I'm like stamping their their personhood with it. Like, oh, this is who you are and this is who you're going to be. Instead, I'm like, hey, you're doing really great. I really love how hard you're working with this. So for this essay, these are some things that I really loved about it. And here are some things you can work on. And I look forward to seeing you do better next time. You know, like this just, it's a huge difference. And I think at the end of the day, like, that's the main thing that I feel like generally hurts a lot of our difficult conversations is we try to have them in the wrong context. And sometimes we have to give people feedback, even if we don't have a relationship with them or rapport, but that's what makes it okay is when you have a relationship and rapport with someone, you have the right in their emotional, in the emotional part of them to like say something like that. And we're just kind of like, well, I'm just like being honest. I'm just telling you. And I'm like, yeah, it's still not going to work because you need to get to know people before you just come for their code.
Absolutely. And that's possibly the main downside of remote working. I mean, I'm a huge fan of remote work, but it does make it harder to create that relationship. We are social creatures after all. Mm-hmm. And it's always easy to do that in the room. I picked out a quote, I think from your LinkedIn, of saying it's not just about clean code, it's about clear communication because the majority of work involves other people. I really like that on what you put. I think that's so true.
Oh, thank you.
So thank you very much, Kylie, for coming on the podcast. I've covered all my questions now, unless there's anything else you'd like to say. I will leave you my final one, which just to remind people where they can find you and how to get in contact if they want to follow up.
So feel free to find me on LinkedIn. I am the only Callie Baruchara. There's only one. It's just me. So you can find me there. Can DM me. You can also email me at hello@majorityofwork.com. And then can peruse my overly simple website, majorityofwork.com as well. And can find the Majority of Work podcast. Just would love to grow that community there and always open to questions and happy to talk about things that are actually important to people. So yeah, I would love to connect in all those ways.